second day since his three companions had left. He sat back, leaning against one of the wheels, munching on a sandwich of bread and cheese, with a tasty apple to follow for dessert. Abe had been looking forward to the moment of the reunion between Trader Ryan and J.B., ever since he first tracked down their old chief. But as he sat there, eyes closed, relishing the warm sunlight, he was only too aware in his heart that something had gone radically wrong. He'd had the dream of the four of them, all for one and one for all, having adventures together, just like they used to in the great days of the all-powerful war wags. They'd chill a few stickies and rescue some beautiful, and painfully grateful, gaudy sluts, then sit around the fire in the evening, while the women cooked up a storm, as the men retold the old stories of battles fought and won, and friends gone before. But it wasn't like that. Abe wasn't the most sensitive man in the Deathlands, but he was painfully conscious of the edge that now lay between Trader and Ryan. And it hadn't proved too difficult to work out just why that was. There was a common saying that you were a baron today and worm food tomorrow. Trader himself used to say that a war wag could have only one driver. Now their little group of four had two separate and distinct leaders. That was both a worry and a disappointment. With that melancholy thought, Abe drifted off into sleep. Abe woke with a start, and he fumbled in near panic for the butt of his stainless steel Colt Python. He stood, half asleep, and nearly fell over. Abe moved cautiously toward the horse, the heavy gun cocked in his fist, his eyes raking the land around for any danger. All he could see was a tiny, bright-eyed rodent with a long, twitching tail scampering away toward its burrow in the line of sight of the horse. The moment the dusky brown mouse disappeared, the pack animal quieted down, carrying on grazing as though nothing had happened.
Stupid bastard horse!
Abe holstered the .357 again. As he turned back toward the hearse, it struck him how long his shadow was, elongated like some spidery giant. Abe lifted a leg, waving his arms, grinning at the capering response from the shadow.
Getting dark already.
One of the team of four matched black horses for the hearse turned at his voice, its ears going back. Abe walked over and patted it, feeling the silk and velvet skin soft against his hand.
You're a good old fellow, aren't you?
He looked westward, beyond Puget Sound, where the sun was half down on the horizon.
I said he'd be back by dusk. No sign of him yet. Well, knowing Ryan Trader and J.B., I'd be surprised if they weren't on the button. Still, I'll go riding to the rescue if they haven't shown up by dawn. Probably having a fine old time and a drinker with sluts draped all over them. They probably forgotten about poor old Abe with the animals. Lucky bastards.
Ryan called out from his lookout position at the top of the stairs.
Getting near dark!
The first floor front of the abandoned house was covered by Trader, occasionally creeping to one or another of the windows, checking on the besiegers. Trader snapped off a shot now and then from the Armalite to keep them at a distance. JB was moving on hands and knees between the kitchen and what had probably been a dining room, keeping his eyes open across the overgrown vegetable garden and small orchard at the rear of the building. There were upward of 20 men in the undergrowth, or there had been at one point. They'd made the mistake of trying to rush the defenders and had paid a heavy toll for their stupidity. Six corpses lay sprawled around the house, one of them having made it onto the front porch, his hand reaching out as though he'd been stricken while trying to deliver an important message to the inhabitants.
Be tough at night. Not much chance of holding them off. Creepy crawl in and fire the place. Go like a tinderbox. Chill us when we have to get out.
Why the fuck are they all so eager to try and chill our asses?
Probably because we're outlanders. Now that they know the kind of blasters we've got, they're ready to pay a high blood price for them.
They already paid big.
Plenty more on that kind of ill gang, though. Life gets to be triple cheap when it's so short.
Ryan ducked as a bullet came through a window at the back, showering more broken glass on the floor, bringing down a chunk of ceiling as it buried itself above his head. JB moved briefly into the hall to be able to talk more quietly to the other two.
We going after him?
Have to. Like you said, night will bring him like flies to honey.
Ryan lay flat on his stomach, looking down into the shadowed hallway.
We told Abe we'd be back by now. Said he'd come looking if we weren't with him by the next dawn at the latest.
You think he'll come?
He came looking for you, didn't he?
Hey, I think the shooting stopped.
That gang outside's probably run low on ammo. But once it gets full night, they won't need blasters to get to us.
Ryan and the others crept down to the first floor. They kept up a constant patrol around the building, catfooting from room to room, watching for the earliest warning of any sneak attack on them. There was still the last residue of light, filtered from the western sky. Something moved above their heads, making Traitor swing toward the stairs, his knuckles white on the armalite.
Only a rat.
I knew that.
Ryan glanced out of one of the broken windows to the side.
Soon it'll be time for us to make a move. I figure they'll be so pissed at us that they'll want revenge and come running for it. Want it right up front.
One of us could stay behind, fire and move. Make the shitheads think we're still here. The other two go out and cold cock them from behind.
Nah, they know the ground. Might be two or three dozen scattered around us. We blunder around and they'll soon hear there's only one blaster firing. That way we all get to be dead, Traitor.
I guess you're right at that. So, all out together? Fast and hard?
Yeah. Best is we cut through that side window. The bushes are closest there. We can charge them, JB at the front with a scattergun. Don't stop.
Unless one of us goes down. We never leave a wounded man behind, Ryan. You know that.
This isn't the Warwag days, Traitor. There's just three of us. Anyone goes down, he's on his own. No argument. That's the way it is. We'll meet up when we can. We passed an old water tower a good mile east of here. Near the top of a real steep hill. Remember it?
JB nodded, his glasses catching the last drop of half-light in the hallway.
Traitor?
Yeah, right. Water tower. Good luck.
Right. Meet up there. Here we go.
Ryan ducked his head, folding his arms over his face, the Sig Sauer in his fist, and ran directly at the window. As he burst through it, there was a cataclysmic explosion and a dazzling burst of bright purple light that flooded the land for miles around. Ryan rolled and came up on his feet, part of his brain numbed by the blast, deciding that one of their attackers must have been hoarding an implode grin. But the more logical part of his mind told him that a massive chemstorm had crept up silently from over the ocean, wading over the center of the Ville, with impeccable timing to release its nuke-borne venom, the air filling with the familiar sour taint of ozone. It wasn't a moment for thinking. It was a time for running and killing. In between the first and second flashes of chem lightning, Ryan had heard the puny crack of a smoothbore musket, but he had no idea where the ball had flown. He headed straight for the bushes, seeing a figure a few feet to his right. Ryan stood and got off a shot, feeling the gun buck in his hand. The figure vanished as though it had been smeared from sight. Someone else, holding a long-bladed knife, raced toward Ryan. A second round from the Sig Sauer punched the man to the ground, his face a mask of silver-black blood. Ryan slipped, a trailing branch catching at his ankle. Then he was up and cutting right, vaulting another hedge, landing on someone, clubbing him with the barrel of the automatic, 25 and a half ounces poking the cheek and splitting the man's eye socket. Traitor was at the corner of his vision, swinging the armalite by the barrel like Davy Crockett on the crumbling, shot-blasted stone walls of the Fortress of the Alamo. There was no sign of JB anywhere. More lightning flashed, and Ryan couldn't place where the scream had come from. The sound of the Smith & Wesson had come from Ryan's left, and he saw a stout old-timer, his gray hair pasted to his skull, fall back, both hands clutching the gaping hole in his guts where the flechettes had ripped the life from him. Ryan dodged between the smooth, silvery trunks, something splintering a hole in one of them, hip-level. The rain was torrential. There was a stream ahead of him, but the one-eyed man tried to leap in a single bound but failed, his combat boots slipping in fresh mud as he landed knee-deep and waded out to the other bank. He continued to run, breath like a fire in his lungs, his heart pounding, his legs weary. The water tower was deserted when Ryan finally reached it, struggling up the steep hill, the highway streaming like a river with the aftermath of the great storm that was now rumbling harmlessly away to the south. Every few steps he turned around to see if anyone was coming after him, friend or foe, but there was nobody, the blank street lined with eyeless houses, the moon breaking through and casting a baleful gleam over the deserted suburb. The door had been propped shut with a rusting girder, and Ryan had set his shoulder to it, levering it open. The inside smelled of urine, The moon darted through the holes in